Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We're here on Monday. It's March 11th, 2019. We are here. We are inside the legal tampering period. I'm excited. Not going to lie, I was expecting a few more moves than we've gotten so far here as we record this about 2:30 Eastern. A couple big moves from the Raiders we're going to get to, of course, on the show today. But joining me to talk about everything we've seen so far, at least, in free agency is someone who I am legally tampering with by taking him away from his other duties at ESPN at the moment, and that is ESPN's Dan Graziano. Dan, how are you?
I'm good. We got to be patient, though. I mean, you want everything to break in like the first couple hours. Like, we got to stretch these things out over the days so that we can properly analyze and overreact to all of them, right? I mean, aren't you the guy who has to analyze every single one of them on .com? So you should definitely want some space between the moves. If anyone would want that, I would think it would be you.
So you think maybe like there should be one signing announced an hour? That should be the rule. Like,
that'd be a solid pace. I mean, so far it seems like all the Drew Rosenhaus deals are getting done, or at least getting leaked, and so maybe the agents are going to take turns. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Does seem like Drew Rosenhaus has been spending a fair amount of time negotiating with Mike Mayock and John Gruden and the Raiders family. Of course, the two biggest moves of the offseason so far, the biggest trade and the biggest free agent signing, both involve Drew Rosenhaus clients going to the Oakland Raiders. Let's start with the big one. Let's just get to it. Let's start with Antonio Brown, traded over the weekend for at least the second time, it seemed like, on Twitter, but this one actually did happen. Traded to the Oakland Raiders for third and fifth round picks. Of course, a lot of discussion about this already. I wrote about it at the ESPN. I think a lot of people have written about it, discussed it. I want to know what you think, Dan, in terms of this deal. If I told you in January, hey, the Steelers are going to trade Antonio Brown and get a third round pick and a fifth round pick, what would your initial thoughts have been?
I would have thought that the Steelers had lost their minds and were getting absolutely raked over the coals in that kind of trade. And I still think that. I mean, I don't understand why they did it. I don't understand why they did it now. If the $2.5 million roster bonus on March 17th was a factor, which I really don't think it was. But even if it was, they still had a week. Could have let the first few days of free agency play out, see who gets desperate. And if it was me, if I only got a third and a fifth, I would have taken it all the way up to the draft and see if it got any better. It's not going to get any worse. So I don't know what the rush was. It's not like they're in camp and he's in there, you know, mucking things up in the locker room and Mike Tomlin's answering questions about it every day. I mean, there was no hurry, and yet they did it and took so little. I was in shock.
Yeah, I mean, that's the strangest part of it to me. You know, I think that if they had gotten a first round pick, you would sit there and say, okay, well, I don't necessarily agree with this trade, but at least they got a significant return for one of the best players in football. And like you said, it's not as if they have to be around him. It's not as if he is, you know, he's doing crunches outside of Steelers camp in Latrobe, and then, you know, all the media's there and they're wondering what he's doing. He's just on Twitter generally being a nuisance, which is what happens. It's what everyone does on Twitter. There's no reason to think he's any different than anybody else on Twitter. And I didn't really, you know, I just don't see, like you said, the logic in making this. Well, maybe it was the Rooney family saying, hey, we got to make this trade by this date. But you saw it happen. They were really flailing in the media. They were saying, okay, well, we need to get a first round pick. And then it was, oh, well, actually, we don't need to get a first round pick. Just get a nice offer. We're not going to give him away. Oh, we can't see him on the roster come next season. We're going to have a Friday deadline. The Friday deadline's not Friday. We're good. It felt like, you know, they were trying to press a team into sort of getting desperate and make an offer. And it's hard to see why a team would get desperate before free agency even begins, let alone the draft.
It's very hard to see it, but you're seeing players push around teams more often than we used to. Smaller scale, a couple weeks ago, Landon Collins with the Giants sort of lets it be known that he's cleaned out his locker, right? And he doesn't want to be there, doesn't want to be franchised. They didn't franchise him. Like, and Dave Gettleman said at the combine, well, we don't want a distraction throughout the summer. That's a terrible way to run your franchise. I mean, what do you care if, like, the media is asking questions about Landon Collins and the franchise tag? That's really going to hurt your team's ability to get ready for the season? I find it preposterous. So, yeah, I mean, Antonio Brown has established a roadmap for incredibly good players, and they have to be incredibly good players, to get out of bad situations or situations that they don't like. And if you're Odell Beckham and you don't want to be with the Giants, if you're Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys are messing with you on the contract, if you're Alvin Kamara and the Saints won't extend you, you know, these guys now know that this can be done and it can work out to their advantage. And I think it has potential to be somewhat seismic in terms of the future of the league.
Absolutely. And I do think you're right to point it out, similar to sort of what happened with Kirk Cousins last year, where, you know, even though he got a fully guaranteed deal, I would hesitate to say that, you know, every quarterback or every, you know, every sort of free agent is going to be able to get a fully guaranteed deal. Of course, that's going to happen. It has to be the right situation. And there's very few players, I think, who can pull off what Kirk Cousins did last year, and very few players who can do what Antonio Brown did. But like you said, that caliber of talent, I think, suddenly they can really look at this and they can say, hey, like, yeah, you know, I can go to a place and get more money if I have no guaranteed money left in my contract. I can, even if it's going to be Oakland, which maybe you might not be thrilled by if you want to win a Super Bowl. It's a situation where, you know, Antonio Brown, I've written about this, he was underpaid for the vast majority of his career. He's been paid totally fine the past couple seasons, but no guaranteed money left on his deal based on how the Steelers do structure their contracts, and decided that he wanted to get that one big payoff and is going to get it in Oakland. From the Raiders' perspective, I mean, do you like this move? I do understand that there's, you know, I don't think they're one Antonio Brown away from contending, but there are reasons why I like it, and I want to hear what you think.
Oh, yeah, I love it for the Raiders. And again, you know, some people have brought up all the timing. They're farther away than that, as you just say. But look, this is a team that's moving to Las Vegas next mm-hmm. year. They're going to need some star power. They want to establish a fan base there. They want people to be talking about their team. So, you know, do you wait a year? In a year, you might not be able to get a player like Antonio Brown. So get him now when he's available. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think it will make Derek Carr a better quarterback. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had nobody like this last year. I mean, Jordy Nelson played all right, kind of all right late in the year, mm-hmm. But he was not supposed to be the number one wide receiver on the Raiders. Now we know who that's going to be. And I think Nelson, he slots into a more sort of, you know, jack of all trades kind of role in the passing mm-hmm. game. And I just think it makes everything make sense for an offense that was inconsistent last year. If you want to see what the best is of Derek Carr and figure out if he's your guy going forward, putting him with a guy like this is a smart move.
Yeah, and 100%. If they decide Derek Carr's not our guy going forward, if it's going to be Kyler Murray or Dwayne Haskins, or they draft somebody next year in the 2020 draft in the first round to play quarterback, well, now you have Antonio Brown, who makes things a lot easier if you're a developing young quarterback. So I totally like the move from that perspective. And I think there's you know, in reading Steelers fans and Steelers media reaction to this, I think there's a little bit of conflating two things. I think this is the difficult part, in that you can say, you know, Antonio Brown maybe deserved to be treated better financially from the Steelers over the course of his career. Even though they gave him an extension after 2 years, it was an extension that he clearly outplayed by the time he got to year two or year three of that deal. The Steelers could have given him more guaranteed money. They could have re-upped that deal earlier than waiting to the final year of his contract. It doesn't make the way he acted in week 17 good. Like, I'm not enjoying that as someone who covers the league or someone who's a fan of the league. I don't want to see players not show up for big games like this, but I think at the same time, like, I can understand why he would be upset, even if it doesn't necessarily excuse the way he acted over the course from January to March.
Right, but I think that's the wrong way to look at it. I don't think we're looking for a way to excuse the way he acted. I think the way he acted was an extremely thoroughly calculated plan to get what he wanted. And I think, you know, it was, I mean, I guess it's an end justifies the means kind of situation, but I don't think Antonio Brown has not been known for years as a problem in Pittsburgh.
Right.
I mean, this is not, like, we know the thing with the Facebook Live, and he got in trouble for that, and he did some goofy stuff. But talk to his teammates. His teammates do not hate him. His
right.
teammates admire and revere him, especially for his work habits and all this stuff that you hear all about. So he lost his mind, apparently, in the final week of the season, had a fight with Roethlisberger, stormed out, didn't play mm-hmm. the last week, and then spent 3 months trying to figure out how he could make everybody mad at him so he could get out of Pittsburgh. I don't think that tells me this is a guy who's going to be a problem in Oakland or Las Vegas. I think he's, you know, crazy like a fox.
Do you think that relationship between Antonio Brown and John Gruden is likely to go well over the course of that contract, though?
a couple of mellow dudes, right, that don't get too bothered by too many things, don't get too emotional or loud about anything, right? I think they'll be all right. No, I mean, look, Gruden, I don't think Gruden got back into coaching because he thought it would be sort of, you know, peaceful and calm. I mean, he wanted the action, right? So now let's go. Let's get some talented dudes. Let's mix it up and see. I think it'll be fine. Honestly, I don't know that they're going to win a lot next year. We'll see what else they do in free agency and in the draft. You know, I got three, obviously, as you know, first round picks. But and if it doesn't go well and he's not getting the ball, maybe. But how's he not going to get the ball? Like, who else is going to get the ball in Oakland? So I think as long as that's happening and we would expect it to, that there'll be peace out there.
Yeah, and I mean, realistically, like you said, you know, he was someone who was splitting touches with Juju Smith-Schuster last year. I think he was in the 165 range for targets. And the Steelers were maybe the most pass-happy team in football, or one of the top two or three most pass-happy teams in football. But like you said, I mean, Marshall Lattman's not getting a ton of touches. Jordy Nelson's not going to get 100 targets. And even if they're not going to be the most successful team, and even if he's taking a downgrade, a quarterback, this could be a thing where he gets 190, even maybe 200 targets if he stays healthy over the course of the season. So, you know, he's going to be a difference maker there. I just don't know that it's going to be enough to maybe propel them, you know, to the places where the Steelers have been over the past few seasons.
No, I wouldn't think so. But again, we'll see what else they do. I mean, it looks like they're upgrade. Well, they're mixing and matching on the offensive line. They traded an offensive lineman. They apparently signed another one. So we'll see. I don't know what they're going to do with running back. And again, you know, is Derek Carr somebody we're all the way sold on, or do we have to see a full year of Derek Carr to really believe in him as the long-term answer? So they're putting things together. But to me, Antonio Brown helps anybody. Whether you're one piece away from the Super Bowl, whether you're trying to piece an offense together, this is we get so bogged down in the negativity surrounding these situations, sometimes people forget how good these guys are. This is a top 5 or 10 player in the NFL who's got a 6-year run of production at wide receiver that's really unprecedented. He's going to make them better regardless.
Yeah, and it costs them some money, which, I mean, they should be fine with money, even though there's some talk of cash flow. They should have enough money to pay one of the best players in football, and it costs them a 3rd-round pick and a 5th-round pick. I can't, you know, you make this move every single time, and honestly, I'm shocked that other teams around the league were not willing to top this offer.
Well, I mean, I think we believe that Buffalo was.
Yes.
That there was that was going to be a swap of first rounders from everything that we've been told, but that he didn't want to go there, or they didn't want to. See, that's the thing, right? It's a sliding scale. Like, will we give you a first rounder? Sure, but then we don't want to throw another $30 million at the guy after we spent a first rounder. So, you know, if we're going to have to pay all this, then the return won't be as good. And I think the Steelers knew that going into the process. And so then maybe they set their sights lower on the return, knowing that the other team was going to have to sign him. But again, they're eating $21 million on their cap for this guy. They could have played hardball. They could have told him, no, like we tried to trade you. We couldn't get what you're worth. And so we're not going to trade you. You're on our team. If you want to come to work, come to work. If you don't, but you know, hey, this is what it's going to be. We're not just going to dump you for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible to think about. You know, the way the Steelers have played their cards over the past 2 years, they're going to lose Antonio Brown, lose Le'Veon Bell, and they're going to get a 3rd-round pick, a 5th-round pick, and most likely a 3rd-round or maybe even a 4th-round, depending on how things go, compensatory pick for two of the best weapons in all of football. I mean, that's not, you know, even if you want to say the Steelers held the line, that they were, you know, a respected franchise, all those things can be true. That's not a good use of your players. It's not if you want to get rid of those guys, it's not a good use of your assets. It's, you know, you're losing superstars. And it's hard to imagine that the Steelers are a better team today than they were during the 2017 season or the 2018 season.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think we go back to last offseason. I remember saying this on television, might have even said it on this podcast, but, you know, things always felt like they were on a tightrope there the last couple of years with the Steelers, and it felt like when it turned bad, it was going to turn extremely bad. Mm-hmm. So now the next chapter is, do they put something together that approximates the success that they've had over the last, you know, decade plus, or do they start to slide? Are there good competitive years left in the Ben Roethlisberger era in Pittsburgh, the Mike Tomlin era in Pittsburgh? Does Tomlin preside over a restructure, rebuild, turnaround that prevents a downturn, and does he last longer as a result? I mean, I think there are a lot of questions about that team. But there are a lot of people that have done a lot of winning, mm-hmm. but they've hollowed out the defense, some through their own fault and some not, over the past couple of years, and now that star-studded offense is looking a little less star-studded.
All right, well, let's get back to this free agency stuff in a second. First, Dan, I want to talk about our friends at SeatGeek, a company and a website and an app I use every single time I go somewhere. Last week, I went to go visit my parents in Florida. You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to go see a spring training game. We were near Fort Myers, wanted to go check out the Red Sox. Hey, went on SeatGeek, bought a couple tickets, had a great time. I bought 3 tickets, to be clear. It sounded like I only bought a couple tickets and like I was leaving one of my parents out. But both my parents went to the game. I won as well. We had a great time, enjoyed Fenway South there in Fort Myers. Great experience. And no matter where you go, no matter what kind of tickets you want to get, you can get those tickets with our friends at SeatGeek. Because SeatGeek is not just one website. It is an amalgamation of so many websites. It goes all around the web. They use their deal score technology to rate the tickets they aggregate. So you know you're getting a good deal. You don't have to overpay. Don't have to get tickets that you're not going to enjoy. You don't have to get tickets that are fake. Because SeatGeek is going to give you real tickets. They are fully guaranteed when you make a purchase. So whether it's sports, whether it's concerts, whether it's comedy, theater, fighting, anything else you need a ticket to, you can get it on SeatGeek. It's shocking, honestly, just the range of things they have. And even better, if you want to get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase, you can download the SeatGeek app onto your phone and then enter in promo code Barnwell, which is my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, Barnwell, to get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So again, SeatGeek.com, download the app. No matter how you do it, make sure you get to SeatGeek the next time you want to buy tickets and go to the event you want to go to and get a great deal in the process. And if you haven't used it before, get $10 off that first time you make that purchase. Go to SeatGeek. Life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to the show. Speaking of star-studded offenses, suddenly the Raiders have the highest paid offensive tackle in all of football, in Trent Brown, the former Patriots left tackle, former Niners right tackle, signed to, by all accounts, an enormous contract for a left tackle. 4 years, $66.8 million, $36.2 million fully guaranteed at signing, $36.3 million fully guaranteed. Let's not cut out that $50,000. Good amount of change for Trent Brown. I figured he was going to get a lot of money. I didn't know if he was going to get, you know, sort of something more than Nate Solder got from the Giants last year, which is a bigger contract than Nate Solder, who previously had the highest annual salary for a tackle in the NFL. But, I mean, I did not expect the Raiders to be making this sort of signing. And I wonder if this is going to be something where we look back in a year or two and say, hey, the Patriots made this player a lot better, and it turns out he was not as good outside of New England.
What have we learned the last 2 years? If you want to really make money in the NFL, play left tackle for the Patriots and then become a free agent. I mean, that is the path, right, to major, major NFL riches. Mm-hmm. So this is a guy, Trent Brown, who was a really good, well-regarded right tackle for the 49ers. Ended up getting traded to New England because the 49ers were turning things over on their offensive line. New England put him at left tackle because they had no other choice, and he ended up being, you know, good enough to help them win a Super Bowl. So he cashes in. Now, look, all these numbers that are coming out today, we have to see the deals. We have to have the deal in our hands, on our computer screens, on our phone, whatever it is, before we really, really know. But if the numbers are as reported, it's more than, that Nate Solder made last year, and it's a significant outlay for the Raiders. What I was told about the Raiders within the last couple days was they're going to spend free agent money on their offense, and then they're going to focus on the defense in the draft, meaning they could use all three of those first-round picks on defensive players and then more. So this is in keeping with what I was told about the Raiders. I thought it might mean a pursuit of Le'Veon Bell.
Right.
That may seem unlikely now that they've gone all out for receiver and left tackle, but who knows? And we'll see what they do, as I said, at running back. But it's a big spend. I believed that Trent Brown was going to get paid at the top of the market tackles just because there were – really aren't that many on the market. And it seems to be that that's what's happened.
Yeah, I mean, after Donovan Smith was signed by the Bucks, earlier this week, it was pretty much, you know, Trent Brown or bust if you wanted the left tackle. And there were a lot of teams out there who had money who were very interested, you know, in the left tackle market. And I think the Raiders did have to pay this kind of premium to get Trent Brown. But, I mean, this was an organization where their two of their first three picks, including their 15th overall selection in last year's draft, was Colton Miller. They drafted tackles. They drafted guys who they figured were going to be their bookends along the offensive line for years to come. And then, I mean, at least 10 days ago, John Gruden, I saw on Twitter, had said that he envisioned Colton Miller turning into a Pro Bowl left tackle, and now he is presumably no longer a left tackle.
Well, you would think, I mean, if you're going to pay Trent Brown, you know, $16.5 million a year, that he would play left tackle and Colton Miller would play right tackle, but we'll see how it sorts itself out. I mean, I don't know. Gruden is sort of an in-the-moment kind of guy, right? Like, if he finds something he likes, he gets excited about it.
This is certainly, I would hope, something he is excited about. And the other thing I think that comes into play here is that with the Patriots, of course, his offensive line coach was Dante Scarnecchia, who is, you know, you can maybe hedge here or there, pick a different guy, you know, pick someone, but he is in the discussion for the best offensive line coach in football every single year he's in the NFL. Top, you know, at worst, at absolute worst, he is a top three offensive line coach. I think you know where I'm going with this. The Raiders offensive line coach is Tom Cable, who is not in the discussion among the top three offensive line coaches. And granted, if you are a Tom Cable fan, I don't know why you exist, but if you are a Tom Cable supporter, what I would say, you know, what you might say is, hey, well, he didn't have the horses to work with. He didn't have anybody in Seattle who was making this kind of money. But I can't imagine he's going to get better coaching in Oakland than he got in New England.
No. And I think if you're Dante Scarnecchia, you take a great deal of pride in the fact that the last 2 years that someone has made a free agent Patriots tackle the highest paid tackle in the league.
Yes.
I think that says a lot about what you're doing there. And, you know, not no offense to those guys. I mean, Trent Brown's a talented guy.
Sure.
It may be that he continues to be a quality left tackle going forward. But no, I agree. I mean, people underrate coaching and its impact in this league. And, you know, the Patriots are the best at working the system.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get a third round compensatory pick for this guy. They had him for 1 year. They won a Super Bowl. They got him for almost nothing. They turned him into a quality left tackle because why? Tom Brady has the ball in his hands for like an eighth of a second. Like, how long do you even have to block if you're playing left tackle for the Patriots? So they understand what they need to do to make guys as successful as possible. And then they accurately assess, well, we're not going to pay top dollar for this guy because he's really not that great a player. He was just very, very good for us in our system, and we wish him well. We're going to find somebody else. They drafted a guy right in the first round, Isaiah Wynn.
Isaiah Wynn, yep.
He'll be the left tackle most likely, and, you know, and on it goes. They'll probably win the next four Super Bowls, and just because they seem to be better at this than everyone else.
Yeah, as Will Brinson pointed out on Twitter, they traded, I believe, the 95th pick to the Niners, got a fifth rounder and 1 year of Trent Brown in return, and now they're going to get probably somewhere around 97 or 98 as a comp pick for renting Trent Brown for a year. So pretty phenomenal turnaround there. The other Raiders offensive line situation we'll get to before the break here, they also made a trade yesterday. They traded Kletche Osemele, somewhat surprisingly, I think I might say, to the Jets, a guy who I think they were seemingly interested in possibly cutting after a few years in Oakland, but a guy who, you know, when they signed in that first year, everything went right and they made it to the playoffs, you know, a guy who was considered to be maybe one of the best two or three guards in all of football, no?
Yeah, he had injuries last year and obviously wasn't as good as a result, and not a lot went right in Oakland, and
yes.
You mentioned the Tom Cable thing, and, you know, so... I think this is a strong bounce back candidate for a Jets team that really kind of needs what he used to be on the offensive line, you know, kind of an established an identity for the room kind of guy. And I think he's seen that way. And, you know, the one down year, maybe it's a sign of bad things to come and they're in trouble. But I think it's a worthwhile risk for the Jets to bring in a player like this when, you know, they have the cap space, they have the cash. They'll probably sign a center, one of the top free agent centers, be it Matt Paradise or Mitch Morse. So they're putting that line together in front of Sam Darnold. Who knows? Maybe they're the Le'Veon Bell team. Maybe they sign more offensive guys to put around their young quarterback. You would think that would be their approach, and Osemele fits that. And I think, you know, obviously the Raiders had to cut somewhere with signing all these other guys, trading for all these other guys that make so much money.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And from the Jets perspective, I mean, if you're a Jets fan and you're spending $10 million a year on a player who you're getting in this offseason, I think you could do a lot worse. I mean, they gave up a fifth round pick, so obviously it's not, you know, it wasn't for free. But I mean, a guy who's on basically a 2-year contract in about the $20-22 million range, not guaranteed. I mean, they could very easily just, you know, if he's not the guy they expect, hey, you traded the fifth round pick, you tried a guy for a year, you know, you upgraded massively, you figure out a guard position, it didn't work out. Well, that's fine. You can survive. You're not going to be heartbroken about that. But the upside is, hey, you just got maybe a guy who was a really good guard of the NFL as recently as even 2017. He was still pretty good. I think a Pro Bowler that year. You know, you got him for a swap of a fifth round pick and a sixth round pick. That's, dare I say it, Dan, almost even Belichickian.
And you know what? Worst case, by all accounts, a good guy to have around your young team, right? Like, that's the other thing. Like, if he can't play the way he used to, and but even if he plays somewhat effectively, right, and he's not worth $11 million, yeah, you can cut him after a year. But maybe that year, you know, was a benefit to the rest of your young team, your quarterback, the rest of that offensive line. So I think your worst case is you've brought in a guy who helps you sort of establish an attitude of, you know, professionalism around a team that's kind of trying to build itself around a young quarterback and a young core.
Yeah, certainly helps. All right, we're going to hit a break here. After the break, maybe talk some Landon Collins with the Giants, talk about some of the moves that have already been made during this offseason here on the Bill Barnwell Show. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm still Bill Barnwell of ESPN, still joined by ESPN's Dan Graziano. Let's talk about some of these other moves we've seen from NFL teams. And one of them was a move that was not a move, I suppose, a act of, I can't think of the word now. But basically the Giants decided to not put the franchise tag on safety Landon Collins, which I know shocked you, shocked me. Can you possibly can find a way to justify why the Giants did this from their perspective?
From their perspective, they felt like Landon Collins was a specific kind of safety, a box safety that isn't a great helper in coverage. And based on where the market was probably going, that $11.15 million, which would have been his franchise number, was too much. And we'll see what kind of contract Landon gets. If he doesn't get $11 million a year, if he doesn't get $11 guaranteed, maybe the Giants turn out to have been right. So that was their thinking. You know, they want to get guys, they need a guy to cover the back end, the deep middle and all that. But my thing is, like, even if you have that guy, Landon's a helpful player, especially if you have that guy. Landon's a helpful player. Like, I would love to see him go to the Colts, like somewhere they have Malik Hooker, right, to play the other safety position.
Yes.
They would complement each other extremely well. Collins makes a lot of plays, even in the passing game. If you're sending him to cover a receiver one-on-one, you're kind of doing it wrong. And I think to ask him to do that is to not put him in the best position to succeed. So with a billion safeties now on the market, we'll see how Collins does in terms of his – I still think he'll have a market, but, you know, we'll see if Gettleman turns out to be right. If he signs for $10 million a year, then maybe Gettleman will be able to sort of puff out his chest and in that you know, thick Boston accent, tell everybody how – he was right about that.
We're going to possibly see the return of the keyboard pantomime from Dave Gettleman if this works out for him. But I mean, like, you know this, having covered the Giants. I grew up as a Giants fan. I watch the Giants pretty closely. It's not like this team has so much talent that they can be picky about the players they do have and where they can be. I mean, if this were the 2011 Giants, 2007 Giants, then you could sit there and say, okay, well, we have players in other positions we want to reward. You know, we want to lock up them and we'll make it work in the safety because we're so deep in the defensive line. We're good at linebacker. We're so good, you know, at receiver. We have so much young talent to work with. This is a team that had so many bad drafts from Jerry Reese that there's not pretty much anything left besides Odell Beckham now from those drafts. And it's not, you know, the Gettleman draft last year seems okay. I mean, Saquon Barkley, we're not going to get into that. We could spend an hour on that and we don't need to do that again. But I mean, it's not as if this team is teeming with so much young talent that they can just let someone like Landon Collins go just because he's not the ideal fit. I mean, they should not only be franchising him, but just, hey, you have a really talented safety. He's not perfect. He doesn't do everything really well. You can construct your scheme, or you can construct a role for that player which gets the most out of his skills relative to the, you know, relative mediocrity you have in a lot of other spots on your defense.
And he's 25.
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing. Like everyone's looking for 25-year-old free agents. They just let one walk out the door. So, yeah, absolutely. And they trade Olivier Vernon. But those are their two best defensive players last year, unless I'm missing some. I mean, frankly, I didn't see a ton of their games. They weren't an overly relevant team. But I think those were the two best defensive players they had, and they're gone. Obviously, they get the starting guard in return for Vernon, so that's something. They get nothing for Collins. But, you know, they're going to have to rebuild that defense. I have my eye on every free agent who's coming from the Arizona Cardinals, right? Because James Betcher came from there, the defensive coordinator, and everybody knows the scheme. So people are connecting Daylon Buchanan there and all these other guys. So maybe we'll see what they want to do in terms of putting that defense together. I think they will be aggressive on defense. I think they will pursue a free agent pass rusher. I don't know what's going to happen by the time this podcast is out, but I mean, names we've heard include Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, anybody named Smith. And I think they'll pursue a safety. They made a call on Eric Weddle after the Ravens cut him. So they know that they need to add pieces on defense. The draft is loaded with defense. So we'll see, but it's a rebuild. They probably should have identified it as a rebuild a year ago. And they're probably a year late on that, but at least they're finally starting to operate like a team that knows where it is.
Yeah, I mean, at least, you know, well, you say that, but then at the same time, I think about the quarterback situation, and I'm a little perturbed when it comes to that.
I knew you were going to bring that up. I felt like you were probably going to bring that up.
Well, you set me up for it quite comfortably.
I did.
If they add a pass rusher, that's great. I don't mind the trade of Olivier Vernon for Kevin Zeitler. I think he's a very good guard, and I don't mind the idea of building through the offensive line. I don't think that's a horrible idea by any means. And you mentioned the Arizona guys. Wouldn't shock me if, given that Dave Gettleman is GM, we see him going after the Carolina guys. I figure they might be in for Darrell Williams before the Zeitler signing makes it tough to spend a lot more money on right tackle, given that they've already now paid, you know, 3/5 of their line significant salaries. It would be tough, I guess, but you know, I could see them going after, you know, the different options. The Odell Beckham thing, that ball still seems to be strangely up in the air. I don't think anything's going to come of it, but, you know, at least that seems to be plausible that there is some discussion there. I just, you know, I appreciate that this team, you know, sort of realizes where they are, but I think they're really far from something of any consequence right now.
The Giants, yeah, I think that's, but I mean, they identified that Eli was their best way to go at quarterback for this year. Mm-hmm. I think their ideal situation is to draft a guy and then have him start next year, or maybe this year if Eli gets hurt, but Eli never gets hurt. So I think that's their plan, is draft the guy, sit him behind Eli and start him next year and build around him. But, you know, they drafted a running back at number 2 last year. So obviously you're going to spend a guard, right? If you're going to build your team around a running back. So that's where their focus is now. Maybe minimize Eli, maybe kind of, you know, lean hard on Saquon Barkley and pound the ball and scale back the number of possessions, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I think at this point, it seems like they're committed to Eli for one more year and only one more year. And then they'll move on from that. But again, that makes it a long rebuild.
Well, Dan, can I break some exciting news to you? Here on the show, we sort of discussed this might happen. And very conveniently, Landon Collins has signed with another football team.
Yeah, Washington, according to our Josina Anderson. That's big for him. That was his team. He's like an obsessive Sean Taylor fan. And so Washington was his team. And it's a team he always wanted to play for, and he had all the jerseys, his Sean Taylor jerseys, and he told the story about how he cried, you know, the day that Sean Taylor, you know, tragically died, and I think he, you know, that's kind of neat to see him sign with a team like that, that he's been a fan of for his whole life. Kind of a cool story.
Yeah, and they love Bama players there, of course, in Washington. So many players on that defense come from Alabama, so not a surprise they would go after Landon Collins. Needed safety, of course, with DJ Swearinger leaving, I guess, for being right on social media and upsetting Washington, that they traded for Ha Ha Clinton Dix last year. That move ended up kind of going south. He ended up leaving. He's leaving free agency. Don't think he's going to resign there. So major need at safety. And now we'll get to see Landon Collins play the Giants twice a year. So the Giants will get to see if they were right about him strictly being a box safety that doesn't deserve big money in the NFL.
Reports that are coming in indicate that the money is, in fact, quite big. But we don't have that yet. I'm going to hold off in terms of saying numbers, but it looks like he may have broken the proverbial bank.
Yes. He's going to make more than $11 million next year, is my suspicion.
Seems to be the case.
All right, well, let's get back to this free agency stuff in a second. But first, Dan, I wanted to talk about our friends at SeatGeek, a company and a website and an app I use every single time I go somewhere. Last week, I went to go visit my parents in Florida. You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to go see a spring training game. We were near Fort Myers, wanted to go check out the Red Sox. Hey, went on SeatGeek, bought a couple tickets, had a great time. I bought three tickets, to be clear. It sounded like I only bought a couple tickets and like I was leaving one of my parents out. But both my parents went to the game. I won as well. We had a great time, enjoyed Fenway South there in Fort Myers. Great experience. And no matter where you go, no matter what kind of tickets you want to get, you can get those tickets with our friends at SeatGeek. Because SeatGeek is not just one website. It is an amalgamation of so many websites. It goes all around the web. They use their deal score technology to rate the tickets they aggregate. So you know you're getting a good deal. You don't have to overpay. Don't have to get tickets that you're not going to enjoy. You don't have to get tickets that are fake. Because SeatGeek is going to give you real tickets. They are fully guaranteed when you make a purchase. So whether it's sports, whether it's concerts, whether it's comedy, theater, fighting, anything else you need a ticket to, you can get it on SeatGeek. It's shocking, honestly, just the range of things they have. And even better, if you want to get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase, you can download the SeatGeek app onto your phone and then enter in promo code Barnwell, which is my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, Barnwell, to get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So again, SeatGeek.com, download the app. No matter how you do it, make sure you get to SeatGeek the next time you want to buy tickets and go to the event you want to go to and get a great deal in the process. And if you haven't used it before, get $10 off that first time you make that purchase. Go to SeatGeek. Life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to the show. Someone who is also going to make more than $11 million next year, someone who interests me from a perspective, because I'm obviously statistically inclined, I'm a little skeptical of this player. I want to know what you think. Is Dante Fowler, who ended up re-signing with the Rams on a one-year deal, looks to be about $14 million, again, depending on where it gets confirmed with the contracts. So something in that range, a one-year deal for pretty big money. What am I missing here? You know, if I think he is a guy who I think is okay, what do you see, what do you hear about Dante Fowler that makes it stand out as he's going to be a, you know, player worth eight figures to the Rams next year?
Well, he's a guy that comes off the edge and sacks a quarterback, and that's a pretty valuable thing. Now, my understanding of the Fowler contract, which again I haven't seen, is that it's something like 11 or 12 million base with incentives that can get it to 14.
Sure.
So that's right about what his fifth year option would have been if Jacksonville had picked it up, which they didn't, which is part of the story, right? He was not a reliable player. They didn't pick up the fifth year option. They traded him to the Rams. The Rams liked him. They felt like he played well for them. Wade Phillips has a specific thing in mind with his pass rushers, and he wants them to be, you know, kind of smaller, quicker guys that take a direct line to the quarterback because he believes that, you know, with the, in the era of shorter drops and pistol and everything, that the old, you know, loop that used to run to get to the quarterback is outdated. And here I am, I'm actually making motion with my hands that no one can see. And so everyone knows I'm actually drawing the loop in the air with my hands, even though no one can see it. That's really helpful to the podcast listeners. But I'm doing it anyway. But Fowler's a guy the Rams like, and they wanted to bring back. They actually considered franchising him, and it turns out they didn't have to. So they're probably going to lose Ndamukong Suh in free agency. They're probably going to lose LaMarcus Joyner, although they sign Eric Weddle, and they hope to fix that. But they felt like Fowler was a good piece for them that helped them in their playoff run, and they wanted to bring him back and help build their defense around him next year.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, certainly has upside. A guy who was the third overall pick in the draft a few years ago, Someone who absolutely the Jaguars thought was going to be a franchise edge rusher. Has never had that sort of big season, though, at any level. In college, I think he maxed out at 8.5 sacks. With the Jags, he missed his first year with a torn ACL. Second year, he played behind Yannick Ngakoue. Third year, was, you know, part of a great defensive line. Had 8 sacks, but, you know, on tape, didn't really have that sort of consistent impact. Mm-hmm. Even last year with the Rams, I mean, he had, I think, 2 sacks in 8 games and then 1.5 sacks during the postseason. And sacks are not everything, obviously. I would not say that you can be you can't be a good player with having a low sack number. But, I mean, you know, I think people are expecting him to be a, you know, a guy who has a 10, 11, 12 sack season. That might, he might have that in him, but Rams are paying him like that's what they're expecting from him in 2019.
He doesn't turn 25 until August 3rd. So this is still a young player. Yep. You mentioned that he missed 1 year, so he's only played 3 years in the league as opposed to 4, which he would have played, you know, had he not been hurt his rookie year. So maybe they're taking a shot on upside, but again, it's a 1 year deal. The Rams are all about the now, right? Like, this, the Rams have to win the very next Super Bowl. That's their goal. So, you know, 1 year deal for him. Eric Weddle's got a 2 year deal that's really a 1 year deal. Right. They're trying to fill their holes in a way that keeps them competitive and gets them to the point where they were this past year, plus 11 points. That's their goal, because they feel like they're right on the cusp, and obviously given the fact that they were the losing team in the Super Bowl, you couldn't be more on the cusp than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't fault them for making this move at all. I think the move for Eric Weddle makes total sense, and I think I'm interested to hear what you think about what else they might do, given that they, of course, probably now going to lose Ndamukong Suh. Like you said, they're probably going to let DeMarcus Joyner leave in free agency. They cut Mark Barron. They declined John Sullivan's option at center. I mean, is there a position or is there a player or is there something you think they're going to target for maybe one more big addition when it comes to the rest of this offseason?
I think they're interested in linebackers. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, they're going to have to address the offensive line because they're losing Roger Saffold, almost certainly, and they'll probably lose John Sullivan, the center. I mean, those aren't exciting positions, but that offensive line was a pretty vital thing to the Rams' success the last couple of years, so they're going to have to address that. And then otherwise, you know, they're going to need a running back to support Todd Gurley if he can't handle the workload the way he has in the past. Obviously, the way his season ended left some lingering concerns about health long-term and short-term. I think they're fairly well set. I would look on the defensive side again because they're losing a lot of pieces. Defensive tackle, Ndamukong Suh leaving. That's something they're gonna have to fill. There's some guys out there on the market, and there's a billion of them in the draft.
Yes, there's a billion of them in the draft. It's a very defensive heavy draft, which is why I have to admit I'm kind of surprised that one of the biggest signings of today, Monday, was Kwon Alexander, who. Again, the numbers are not exact as of yet, but every indication is that he got a 4-year deal for what would be record-setting money for a linebacker who does not rush the quarterback. Kwon Alexander, a former 4-3 middle linebacker with the Bucs, will probably play the same role for the San Francisco 49ers. Again, what am I missing here that makes the Niners think this is a guy who's worth Luke Kuechly money, or maybe even what C.J. Mosley is going to get, that caliber of player?
I don't know, man. Honestly, I'm shocked. I mean, it's another one where I say, let me see the contract, right? Let's see how much is real, how much is guaranteed, how much is per game roster bonuses, how long they're committed to him. This guy's coming off a torn ACL.
Right.
Hasn't really performed at that high a level the last couple of years. And he's going to get 13 and a half. What is CJ Mosley going to get? What is Anthony Barr going to get? I mean, these guys must be celebrating, those numbers. And I think it's interesting that these sort of, you know, these linebackers that aren't like classic edge rushers are going to get numbers like this. We saw Barr and Mosley not get franchised by the Vikings and Ravens respectively, because, you know, they felt like the price was too high at 15, but maybe it doesn't turn out to be as high as they thought it was. The market has a chance to go a little bit bonkers on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that's bonkers for sure. And the Niners are a team where they make moves where if they like a guy, man, they like him. And they make an offer that makes sure they're going to get him. And, you know, in years past, it's been a Malcolm Smith at linebacker who hasn't worked out. Kyle Juszczyk, who you know, useful player, but making three times as much as every other fullback in football. Last year it was Jerick McKinnon, got $12 million in year one, tore his ACL, and I think it's unfair to say that, you know, couldn't have expected that was going to happen, but in an offense that traditionally has been very effective with, you know, no-name running backs and draft picks running in the, they were totally fine with Matt Breida, as their primary back last year, so I don't know if those moves always worked out, so it'll be a very interesting contract to look at when we get the final details on that deal. Let's finish up here, Dan. Just a couple of quick questions for you. Of course, you wrote about some free agent nuggets you were hearing heading into the final moments before the tampering period began for us at ESPN. In terms of the players who are out there still at the moment as we record this, is there someone out there who you think is going to get a lot more money than maybe the public might realize right now?
Well, it's been out there in a couple places, but I think, you know, Tyrell Williams, the wide receiver from the Chargers, is probably going to do very well on a market that doesn't really feature a lot of guys like him. There's a lot of slot receivers on this market, and they'll do well, guys like Adam Humphries and Jamison Crowder. But Williams is a 6'4" guy that plays on the outside, and this free agent market and really the draft aren't really loaded with guys like that. So I wouldn't be surprised if someone gives him something close to number one wide receiver money. For a guy who's really never even been that. So that's one that jumps out. I think the Trey Flowers deal, when it comes in, looks like it's probably going to be with the Lions. I think that'll be a monster deal because he was an edge rusher that, you know, a lot of the other guys got franchised. Dante Fowler got, you know, re-signed. I think, you know, that's a competitive market for Trey Flowers. And, yeah, I think it's the early returns indicate that some of the numbers are going to be pretty big, and a lot of them are going to blow people away.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of money to spend, and this is not a great crop of free agents. There's positions, safety. Now, you mentioned, I believe, slot receiver is another position where there's going to be some talent to work with. There are going to be spots where there's going to be some, you know, there'll be a lot of options, and you'll see maybe one of the players in that mix or two of the players in that mix, you know, kind of lose the game of musical chairs and have to settle for a shorter deal than maybe they were hoping for. But there are a lot of teams with, you know, a lot of money to spend, some competitive teams with a lot of money to spend who are going to be incentivized to go out and add a player or two. And, you know, a lot of key positions, a tackle, at guard even, wide receiver, tight end, you know, I would say some elements of a cornerback, certainly, a lot of positions where there's just not a lot of talent to go around. So I think you're going to see some really big deals in the days to come where I know I'm already shocked by some of the deals. So I did not think Quan Alexander was going to get Luke Kuechly money, and here we are. So it's going to be a very fun next few days, especially if you are a free agent NFL player. But Dan, it is always a pleasure. I know you're a very busy man this week. Where can people check out all the stuff you're doing for us at ESPN this week?
I'm on GetUp every day this week. They got me down in New York in studio, kind of being their sort of NFL free agency guy. So I think that's a cool, fun place to see me from 8 to 10 Eastern every day this week, and then we'll be sort of writing as it's called for. One thing to watch out for, we've mentioned this a couple of times. Mm-hmm. You know, the deals. We do, yes, a piece every year. It comes in about a week where we break down who really got the best deals and dig into the details and everything. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage people to watch out for that, because that gives you a better sense of sort of, you know, what these deals are really all about, as opposed to the top line numbers that get blasted out right when the signings happen.
Yeah, I mean, that information sometimes is coming from agents, perhaps, who maybe are a little more incentivized to give out a very high number than the number actually is in hindsight. But yeah, I mean, very interesting time to come. Dan, it's always a pleasure. Please get some rest before you have to go back on Get Up Again tomorrow at 8 a.m.
I'll try.
You will try, but there's a lot of stuff happening. It's a very busy period. Dan, it's a pleasure.
Not a great time for rest.
It's not a great time for rest is probably the right way to put it. Dan, thank you so much. We're going to come back later this week with another episode of the show talking about free agency. Some more audio coming, but thanks so much for listening.